Hey guys, I just want to start off by saying thank you for listening to the podcast. But I can't stress enough how important it is for me to continue on producing content, for you to go on and leave us a review on iTunes or the Podbean app. Your questions and comments help me keep this thing going, and it's really important for the podcast. The more reviews we get and the higher up in the ranking I go, the more people I could reach. It's really important for you to do so. If you really like the podcast, we'd like to hear from you, and we would really, really appreciate the feedback and reviews. Also want to take a little bit of time here real quick to thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for their continued support of the podcast. And if you want to up your shooting game, go check them out, phoenixshootingbags.com. You can use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and purchase bags for 20% off. So check them out. This, honestly, it's a game changer, and you won't be disappointed. So phoenixshootingbags.com. Let's roll into the next episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about kind of how conservation works, some concerns that I've been trying to address with people that are sending me questions and so on and so forth, and I stumbled across my guest, Charlie Evers is his name, and I stumbled across him because I've been pushing my Hunter Up initiative, and I'm trying to get guys to do recruitment and bring kids and just non-hunters out in the field and have them, you know, become part of the community. And I've been getting a lot of opposition because everybody's like, oh, why do I want to create more competition for myself? Why do I want to have, you know, less places to hunt and less opportunity for tags and blah, 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 and so on and so forth. And every time I say that the, you know, hunters' numbers are down, people are like, no, the, you know, the license sales are higher than they've been in 25 years and da-da-da. So I kind of been doing research and doing due diligence, and actually came across Charlie's wrote an article on the Meat Eater blog, and it actually talks about everything that I was looking for. I found all this information apart from him, so probably the same way he found the information when he wrote it. But anyhow, without further ado, what's going on, Charlie?
How's it going? I'm up here in, I'm in Montana. It's raining. It's about 40 degrees, close to snow. It's June 21st, so you know how it goes.
Right.
But yeah. What kind of dog you got?
It's a Vizsla. I have a Vizsla, and my wife has a Pomeranian. That's the little yappy one you hear in the backyard. Somebody must have just knocked on my door or something. But
I might be coming into an English setter here in the next 2 weeks. My dad and I are potentially getting two brothers. I've been bird hunting with him since I was about 10. So about 20 years.
Nice.
I've been hunting. Anyway, yeah, so the story you were talking about was this one for Meat Eater, and I was trying to track hunter numbers. It kind of started. Do you want to hear how this story went about, or?
Real quick before we jump into that, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I'm a trail crew leader for the Park Service. I work in Glacier Park, and then last year I worked up in Wrangell St. Elias in Alaska. That's what I do seasonally. So from April to November, basically now I'm, you know, leading a crew of 4 to 6 people into the mountains, and we're building bridges, blasting avalanches,
cool,
building rock walls, digging drains, cutting timber, what you name it, finding people who get lost, finding people who fall off mountains, fall in rivers, all kinds of stuff. So that's what I'm doing right now. In the wintertime, I'm a freelance journalist. I'm trying to go more towards the journalism. You know, it's just easier on the body, but still having fun doing this. So, you know.
For sure.
That's my job. I'm from Albuquerque. I came to Montana in 2010, and then went to school here. I got a graduated from University of New Mexico with a technical writing degree, and then I came up to University of Montana, and I got a journalism master's, which, as you know, is not a growing field. So I'm just trying to, you know, make ends meet, kind of, and have a good time doing it. So,
yeah.
I work for Bugle Magazine often. They're out of Missoula, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, so that's kind of where I got my start. I still work with those guys real regularly. I worked at Outside Magazine as a fact checker for only 6 months, kind of left there and went back to the Park Service, and then I'm still writing for them and then a couple other outlets around Montana. And yeah,
nice.
That's more my, that's my work life.
Yeah. It's a tough field to begin with. And then even tougher to be in the hunting outdoors niche. I've been writing, since I think my first published article was like in 98 or 99, something like that. And
okay.
It was easier then than it is now, that's for sure.
It's nutty. I mean, it's, you know, I don't think the rate of pay, it's not, I mean, hourly, it's not worth it.
Definitely.
I do the math, I'm like, I'm making like $1.50 to $2.50 an hour, but it's fine, right? Like,
yeah.
Well, it's not fine, but it is, it's just how it is.
It is what it is.
So that's a little bit about me. I had a question for you. Are you the Stallone of the Stallone Ram out of Arizona?
That's me.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a OM for the Boone and Crockett Club.
Oh.
So I've been doing that since 2012. They're out of Missoula as well. So I used to walk past their office and read all the Roosevelt quotes on the statue and walked in there and kind of got involved. But, that's interesting. I was just curious. I had measured up that there was a sheep in 2012 out of Ladrone. I think it was off Ladrone, and it was like, I think it was number 4. We green scored it, me and the biologist and I. Anyway, I was kind of interested in desert rams for a while. I still am, but, you know, I'm up in the north, so. Anyway,
yeah,
that's good to know.
No desert, no deserts up there. I mean, well, there's desert,
no.
technically desert, but no desert sheep up there. But yeah, so cool. So let's hear the story about how this article came about.
Okay, so the title of the article is "Hunter Numbers Are Down, So Why Are License Sales Up?" And I was trying to track. I went to Outdoor Retailer in January, and I was talking with some folks there, and I heard that Patagonia and Backcountry Hunters and Anglers were joining forces.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a curious thought. You know, I left there. I was there for different reasons, but I couldn't figure out why Patagonia would join with a, you know, quote-unquote dying group. Like, hunter numbers, I've been told, are down.
Right.
And, you know, Patagonia seems to be doing pretty good for themselves. Excuse me. So.
Yeah.
So I was looking at numbers, and I was trying to figure out, like, well, what do I know? You know, and then I looked at the data, and it was saying, well, there's been more, you know, there's 200,000 more hunting licenses sold in the last 3 years. And I thought, well, that's not what I've been hearing. So then I started, you know, looking around and making phone calls and, you know, however many hours and phone calls later, this is the story came out of it. It's it's kind of an interesting deal. I thought it was pretty ingenious. However, the states are getting more money. So the long and short of it is that there aren't more hunters in the field, but more people are purchasing hunting licenses through the way states are selling them, right? So
everybody's getting creative to grab a piece of the pie.
Right, right. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, you know, gives out money. Well, they give money to the states through Pittman Robertson, or I think Dingle Johnson. I'm not sure how that really applies, but they give money to
the same way. It's a fishing version of that, of the Pittman Robertson.
Excellent. Yeah. So they, you know, the state goes to them and they say, hey, we have this many hunters. That means we need, you know, this percent of money from the pool. It's kind of how I understand it. And
yeah,
if your numbers go up relative to your neighbors, right? So like Arizona goes up compared to Mexico or whatever, then you're eligible to get more. It's just the way the formula works. So
right.
Yeah, I was like, well, that's pretty interesting. But there's no more hunters still, right? Like, there's not more hunters. Calling these folks and they're saying, well, we started selling combination licenses. So, you know, in Idaho, they're selling fishing licenses and hunting licenses combined for like $5 difference. So if I buy a fishing license in Idaho for $30, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I can buy a hunting fishing combination for $35, but then I'm considered a hunter. So that number gets sent to, you know, I'm one more that Idaho can send to the feds to get more money.
Yeah, when it's happening nationwide. They're counting you twice, actually. They're counting you twice because now they're counting you for the Dingle Johnson money and they're counting you for the hunting.
Right, it's pretty clever, right? It's clever.
Right.
And I don't know, you know, that's just how they had to do it, I guess. Like, it does, if you look at the other data, same from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they're saying there's just less people in the field. And, you know, I find it hard to believe I hunt and I see people in the mountains. But, I think the numbers don't lie. I'm sure that there are less people hunting. I mean, it's kind of it's a hard thing to get into. It's a hard thing to do. And, like, at the end of it, you got to deal with a bloody mess. So, like, that's not really that appealing to most people. Right, like, why not? You just buy it at the store,
right? And you go to a store that to buy a steak, it costs you $30. That same steak out of a elk or a deer or whatever is three times the amount. You know,
right?
So it's not like you're saving yourself any money.
My dad and I have shot $500 pheasants. You know, public land pheasants.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. One thing I wanted to bring up, we were talking about the hunting numbers. So,
yep.
Not only is the number numbers down, let's in comparison, let's say from 1980 to now. Okay, there was, and I don't remember the exact numbers right now myself, off the top of my head. But let's just say there was 100 hunters in 1980, and today there's 90 hunters. But in 1980, there was like 3.5 billion people in the world, and now there's 7 billion people in the world.
Right.
So not only are the numbers down, and I think I read somewhere the latest number was like 16%, which doesn't sound like 50, a lot.
Yeah, I thought it was 15 or 16%. I thought it was 15%.
Yeah, somewhere around there. But you also now occupy way smaller percentage of the population. That doesn't affect you and I for, you know, availability to hunt and competition as far as, you know, that's concerned. But what it does is it messes with our ability to win in legislation, you know, when we're up against something that's hunting related. So
right. I mean, it's a pretty, our voice we have money, right? I mean, that's a lot of money that the states are able to access. So you have money mm-hmm. to be able to control access points if you're a state who's using your money wisely, right? So people want to go bird watching. Well, if this is a fishing access point, you make sure that says fishing access point or whatever, right? I mean, there's ways I think people could get the, you know, more people behind it, but I think you're right. I think there's less people hunting, but it does seem like, at least in Montana, but this is Montana, right? It seems like everybody's moved to Montana to become a hunter. I mean, you get on social media and it's insane. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, well, that's where all the cool kids are at.
That's what I hear. I didn't know it. I'm on the wrong side of the mountains, though. I'm up in the North Country. They're in the banana belt down there. I don't know. I think it's interesting. I mean, like my girlfriend, for instance, she's from New Hampshire, and she's very interested in going hunting. I killed a deer with her last year. You know, she watched me just shoot this thing right in front of her, and you know, we were walking out, and there's grizzly tracks in the snow, and there's wolves howling, and it was all the whole get up, right? And my mom sent some green chili up. We just had a green chili, you know, whitetail roast this week, and she wants to go shoot a deer, right? So I don't think hunters are out. I think that it's just how you present it, and it seems like there's a lot of people who are trying to push the message right now. So it remains to be seen, I think, what kind of political power hunters still have, if that makes sense. That's my opinion. I, you know, could be totally wrong.
No, yeah. I mean, it's not completely off.
I have a person on my crew. This is my first time in my life I've ever dealt with this, and they want to be referred to as they and them. And they're a vegetarian. And so, you know, I usually cook meat because we, you know, we have Yetis, we whatever, and we pack them in on mules. Mm-hmm. And I have meat dishes down, right? It's like you shoot something, I know what I'm going to cook. And so now I've been slowly trying to be like, oh yeah, well, what happens if I didn't buy, they're from California. What happens if I didn't buy this at the store and it wasn't factory farmed? Like, this came off of that hill across the river, you know,
mm-hmm.
I went up there and got this. I mean, you know, the animal never saw the inside of anything. Right. So,
right.
Would you be more comfortable eating that? Yeah, and so I'm slowly, I think I'm working where I'm going to be able to cook how I like to cook here soon.
Nice.
Anyway, that's tangential.
But it's, you know, that kind of stuff, that's one of the things that I've been kind of preaching lately, is that you don't necessarily have to convert people to hunters. You just need to make them understand that it's not a bunch of guys drinking beer, running around in the back of pickup trucks, just shooting at every animal they see, you know, like, and the level of cruelty, that whole humane, dialogue that goes around. If you look at the life of a animal that's pen raised or whatever, or raised to for food versus a wild animal, I mean, half the time you're doing them a favor by killing them, you know, because they don't know. Like, when death in the wild is savage. I've watched coyotes take down deer, and I mean, they rip the butthole out, and you know, it's just a horrible, horrible death to be eaten alive, you know, starve to death.
Nature's rough.
Yeah, starve to death.
Grizzlies are hunting fawns right now. Grizzlies are out on the hills trying to rip up fawns. Like, that's what they're doing. Like, that's what's happening. That's a reality, right? Like, that's true.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the biggest problem I see is that us as a community and the people who run our major organizations and the Fish and Wildlife never did a good job of explaining to the public what is what. And it allowed the anti-hunting groups and the so-called, you know, the environmentalist conservationist type that say they're conservationists, but, or, you know, are not, and they just pump out propaganda. You know, they just pump out, like, I was just, last week, I have, matter of fact, I wrote an article on it, and I haven't released it yet because I haven't proofread it, but there's this public figure, environmentalist chick on Instagram. She's got, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand followers or whatever, and she stole a photo from a hunter. So a hunter posts this photo up. He finds a fawn laying next to his 3D target in his backyard. The fawn's laying next to the target, and you know, it's a cute photo, little fawn laying next to a you know, a Glendale buck laying down on the ground. And in the caption he wrote, "Found this fawn in my backyard when I went outside to go shoot. I didn't get close because I didn't want to, you know, spook off, the, you know, or make the mom not want to come back or whatever. And then I, you know, watched it about an hour later, the doe came and got her and, you know, and they walked off together basically, you know, cute little story."
Right.
She takes the photo.
No big deal.
Yeah, she takes the photo. She puts it on her Instagram or Facebook. I don't remember exactly now what it was. It says, "When did we lose our way? This poor fawn, you know, thinks that this is its mom." And, like, basically, not says it, but implies that hunters killed its mom. When anybody knows anything about hunting, knows there's no deer season going on when there's fawns dropping. This is a spotted fawn. Like, this is like a 2-3 day old fawn in the picture, you know? And, you know, I'm not going to say that all hunters, but every hunter that I know don't really even shoot does, mature does, when they have fawns with them. And they're not even considered fawns anymore once hunting season comes around, you know?
I mean, they're viable. Yeah. They're able to make it.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, that's the way it works.
So,
it's biology.
But, oh my God. So that went viral. And one of the things that made it go viral, too, is because a lot of hunters were, you know, commenting on her photo and disputing that, you know, that photo. But the problem is people don't read comments. You know, they just see the caption. They see the poor foot, and they just, they pipe in, "Oh, that poor baby," you know. And there was a lot of people that weren't anti-hunters that were piping in and saying, you know, hunting's wrong. But, like, you know, but you know they're not. You go look at their profile or whatever, you could tell they're not a hunt, not a non-hunt, or an anti-hunter, rather. And it's just crap like that just converts people, converts the middle ground. And we as a community, and like I said, the powers that be in Fish and Wildlife and all our conservation organizations, they don't do a good job of teaching the non-hunting public about the reality of what hunting and fishing is about. And
well, hunters have footed the bills. I mean, you can look at the numbers. They've been footing the bills for a lot of this public access since 1930, right? And before that, it wasn't really much of a conversation.
Right.
Why would it have been? Right.
You and I know that, but nobody else knows that. That's the problem. And if you do a Google search, where does the money come for conservation? I think it was like, I did a post on this the other day. There was like 8 of the top 10 searches that came up were all from anti-hunting organizations, basically saying that money that comes from hunters is a tenth of what they raise.
Huh.
Yeah, so I don't know if you knew that or not, but that's like, so how do you expect, you know, in the long term to win this, you know, to keep hunting going and to keep this lifestyle sustainable when the most important group out there is the middle ground, who don't really, they don't hunt, but they don't really have an opinion one way or another.
And there's a proverb easily, about that, right?
Yeah.
It's like a just man will be known by his actions, I believe. I think that's, I believe that's the proverb. But I agree. I don't think that land agencies or wildlife management agencies really get the message out. Like, it's bad across the board, right? Like,
yeah,
it's public wildlife. Like, it doesn't belong to anybody, right? So, like, how did Arizona get desert bighorn sheep? Well, I mean, they grew on the mountain, yes, but then, like, things happened. And then their numbers, I mean, I don't know the Arizona population that well, but I'm assuming that their numbers dropped kind of significantly at some point in time. And then somebody was like, oh, no, how are we going to pay for this, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's the people who hunt who have an active interest in climbing cliffs where bighorn sheep live and checking out golden eagles, maybe shooting one, figure out a way to get more sheep up there. And that takes money. I mean, it's just the way it is, right? That's reality. Like, it costs money to buy out sheep, you know, people who have domestic sheep, it costs money to do predator control. It costs money to transport sheep to viable habitat. It costs money to have biologists study them. It costs money to have wardens to, you know, enforce regulations. It costs money. And I don't think that people really face, you know, I can speak more to New Mexico or Montana on bighorn sheep, but, like,
mm-hmm.
they don't face the reality that, like, there's somebody out there camping, right, and they're watching these herds, and they're going all over the place, you know, they're driving 8 hours at a time and living someplace for a week to watch these things, study them as best they can, flying surveys, and really watching populations and really concerned that they... concern for this species, right? And that's mm-hmm. not Greenpeace. Like, it's just not. It's not
right.
true. Like, that, it's, you know, it's New Mexico Department of Game and Fish. It's Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. I mean, they're the ones we've trusted, right? That's who the states, since it's nobody's wildlife, you know, mm-hmm. in theory, it was put into state management. And that's who the states have decided to manage their game animals, or animals in general. Like, we don't shoot right. songbirds, right? Like, why is that? Because we made that a policy. Hunters did, right?
Right.
It's a strange time. It's a strange time to be dealing with it. Because I don't want to lose any more public access, or, you know, I don't want to lose any ground, right? I want my,
right.
if I have kids, I want them to be able to hunt and have opportunities for game just the same as I did.
Yeah. Right. And that mentality needs to be shared, because I think a lot of it right now is people like, it's not going to happen in my lifetime, so I don't give a shit.
That's not true. I live inside the park, National Park, right? And that's,
uh-huh.
It's a million. It's 1.1 million acres of public land, right? Like, across the river is Forest Service. So add in the 1.5 million or whatever. But driving to reception today, somebody posted on Forest Service land, "No trespassing." And I know for a fact that's Forest Service land, because I hunted it last year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Forest Service marker that they tried to cover up. Right? This was 2 weeks ago. Somebody ripped down that sign and threw it on, you know, and it's somebody who just got it there. They bought a cabin 3 years ago, and now they're Airbnb in it. And so they're trying to make a profit off of this serene landscape that they think nobody uses because blah, blah, blah. So they just threw up a sign thinking no one's going to care, right? But right there, I can tell you 10 people who care, because they use that land. And they want the access to, you know, there's grizzlies walking through there. There's elk, there's all kinds of stuff, and then you can fish there, right? But some guy decided he could put a sign up, and who knows how many times that's happening everywhere, and they're locking you out or they're keeping you away from what is rightfully yours. And it's only going to, yeah. I mean, there's more people moving here. There's more people who want access to the stuff. It's only going to get worse. And I mean, look, you just cited the numbers. It was $3.5 billion in 1985. Double that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's crazy. They're expecting 30% uptick by 2050. I mean, it's funny because that's such a hard thing for,
right.
Because I've actually read some data saying that less and less people are having kids these days and that our population is going to start decreasing, which honestly, I'm cool with. I mean, I look at the world like a wildlife game manager. You keep doing things that I sound like a crazy person sometimes, but you keep doing things to make life safer. So less and less people are dying and, you know, living longer and whatnot. This world only has so many resources, you know. You keep making the population increase and grow and stuff like that. It's just not sustainable for anybody, for any animal, and that's including us. So
it's too much pavement.
Yep.
Yep. Too much pavement.
That's for sure. Need to stop the building. But that's the whole
yeah, thing. No, it's crazy. It's crazy to watch how, I mean, I think one of the things, you know, I'm a millennial. So one of the things that my generation, I think we are coming to terms with is like, oh wait, like you're in history right now. And like what's happening right now is going to have an effect. Right. Mm-hmm. So like we're playing for keeps, right? Like they were playing for keeps in the early 1900s. They were playing for keeps and, early 1800s, we're playing for keeps right now. And that's true, right? Like but that's hard to realize when you think, well, I got a phone and I can scan through some photos and look at that pretty place. That pretty place is there and I know it's there because my friend went there, but that doesn't mean you're not playing for keeps.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like people want these things. It's just the way it works. So I don't know.
Yeah, they want these things, but I don't know. I just don't know. I think that everybody thinks about the future, like, you know, like Teddy Roosevelt. Him and his cronies said, "We're doing this for us now, but we're really doing it because this needs to be here 100 years from now." You know. Or whatever.
Right.
I don't know that. I mean, I'm sure it's a large majority that do, but I don't know that everybody's on board because there's people within the hunting industry that don't even know what Pippin Robinson is, you know? They don't know how it works. I don't know. I feel like the whole going back to the whole thing is the education is not there. And it needs to be there. And I think some of this money that's being spent on things could better be spent on, you know, be much better spent on teaching everybody about where that money comes from and how the North American conservation model works.
Right.
So.
I mean, have you seen any good YouTube short, you know, a 5-minute video briefly explaining how it works? I haven't seen one.
Nope.
Right?
I have not. I've been searching.
Yeah, it's not that difficult of a concept. I mean, they made it, you know, 80 years ago. It's been around a while. Somebody had to have figured it out by now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I do this pretty often. You know, I was coaching soccer for a little while for my kids. One of the places that I train at, what I work out at, the class that I take is always with young athletes. And I've done this multiple times. Where I can inject it. I've asked, you know, because they're like, oh, well, cool. You're a professional archer and a hunter. You know, some people are just cool. They think it's cool, you know? And then I'll inject in that situation. I'll say, hey, do you guys know what the word conservation means? You know, and everybody will kind of, they'll all give me like a somewhat idea of what it is. And then the very next question is I'll ask them, do you know where the money comes from to pay for conservation? Where Fish and Wildlife and, you know, where they get all this money from? And every one of them says, my taxes. And then you have to explain to them, no, it doesn't.
No.
It comes from this. And
it's
that's
a self-supported thing.
Right, exactly. And right. That's the thing, that's, you know, that's where the disconnect is, because they don't know.
Well,
you know, one of the things that I'm working towards is trying to get it into schools, you know, try to get it into, like, it just has to be one chapter, you know, in like sixth grade where they're exposed to it, and that way it's in the back of their mind, it's something they know moving forward in life.
So at the risk of sound, I have two things. At the risk of sounding like a socialist, which I am not, I work for the Park Service. I'm a government ditch digger at the end of the day, and I half the year, but
yeah,
I do it because I'm working for everybody, and that's the only reason I'm still doing the job. It's fun, but also like that kind of fades away. But I do think that it's a benefit for the American people. I mean, that's what these places were put here for. And however we use the land, that's a whole different conversation. But it's only ours because somebody put the effort into making it ours. Or people, you know, not just some, a lot of people, a lot of smart people got together and said, we want this. And you have interests that want to capitalize on something that belongs to everybody. And I don't know that that's wrong, right? It's happening right now where people are trying to, you know, have more sway than maybe they should on the people's land, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody with more money or what, and you'll lose it. We'll lose it. I mean, you might not lose it. It's not going to be like, oh, they just sold 1 million acres. It's going to be like, oh, there's a little regulation that got put in there, and then now you can't drive there anymore. Oh, and that trail got closed because now, you know, we have a outfitter who, you know, they pay for this, so now they're just going to take that little quarter. And it'll happen. I mean, it happens. And so you kind of got to be watching, right? And it's going to happen the same with wildlife, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
You got to watch that stuff. And my second question is, I've been trying to figure this out for 10 years, is what is a conservationist?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, right? I look around and I'm trying to figure it out, and it's like, well, is a conservationist somebody who makes their money off of wildlife in some way? Because then, you know, that's how they're defined. Or is it somebody who's like benevolent, who just is out in it for the good of everyone, which is, I haven't met anybody like that.
Yeah, right.
Right?
I mean, we're selfish. We're a selfish creature, you know.
You gotta make a living, right? Yeah. You gotta make a living. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what a I know what a conservationist used to be, but I don't know what one looks like in 2019 or 2020.
Right.
I haven't figured it out yet. It's kind of a nebulous definition for me, you know, looking across the board. I wonder if you have an idea what you think a conservationist is.
I've asked myself the same question. I will say this, that I think one of the things that blurs the lines a little bit is that if you look at some of these groups out there that are non-hunting groups, they're fighting for some of the things that we as hunters, so we have similar, you know,
interest
ideas when it comes to, like you were just mentioning, you know, big industry taking away land, you know, being sold off of money. We share that same common, you know, goal as, I can't think of an organization off the top of my head right now, but Wildlife Federation, whatever it is. But they're an anti-hunting group. So, like, there are groups out there that are non-hunting that do some conservation work, and there are, I would say, most of the hunting groups all do conservation work. I'm kind of going around in circles as to what how I want to word this, but the way I feel it is this. From the standpoint of hunting, I feel like you need to do things pro-hunting. Everything you do is pro-hunting. You can't just be one-sided. It can't just be about what it is that you know, whatever niche you occupy in the hunting industry. So, like, what I mean is, if you're an elk hunter and that's all you're passionate about, don't just worry about the issues that affect elk hunting. I think a true conservationist looks at everything kind of holistically, you know, and what's the greatest good for everything? And I'm still not really explaining myself the way I really want to.
No, it makes sense.
But, you know, I feel like there's a lot. Yeah, I just actually had a conversation when I was on somebody else's podcast, and we were discussing, you know, like supporting one another and whatnot, because there's the coyote contest stuff coming up and other, you know, when they went after mountain lions, you know, some hunters stood up for, you know, abolishing or banning lion hunting. And I've had it before. Like, I posted a picture of me and a lion that I killed some, you know, back in 2013. And, oh, I thought you were cool. I followed your content. I thought you were a badass hunter. But now that you're posting lion stuff, I don't, you know. So it's like, you may not, what I'm getting at is, you may not agree with, you know,
right,
everything
your
about
pursuit.
It. But you gotta, like, you gotta look at everything as a whole and see where everything fits in and how it benefits the whole system, basically. And I think the people that are doing that are the guys that are the best quote unquote conservationists.
Yeah. You're not so much for me, like, so I was in Alaska and, you know, I've been around grizzlies for 10 years now. And I really enjoy watching them, right? Like, it's like, they're always interesting. Every time you come across one, there's just always something funny, right? And I honestly have no interest in shooting one. Like, I went bear hunting with my buddy and he wanted to get one, that's cool. I just personally don't have an interest in shooting a grizzly bear. I don't know why. I like watching them. I like taking pictures of them, but I make plasters of their prints, right? I don't want
to. Not for everybody.
Have a problem with somebody else shooting one. I get it.
Yeah.
It's cool. Like, it's just not for me.
Yeah.
And I think
my personal standpoint on it is, well, specifically grizzlies for me, like, I'd like to shoot one, and that's it. Like, just, you know, kind of, not necessarily check it off the box, but I'd like to have, I'd like to experience that hunt once in my life, but it's not something I think I'd want to do every year, year after year, you know. It's not, that's, you know, same thing with black bears. I haven't gone black bear hunting in forever. I mean, it's probably been 8, 9 years now since I've gone last, and I've shot my fair share of black bears. I got them several different ways, the way I wanted to do it, and then after that, I was like, it's not something that I need to go do. But, you know, obviously, I'd be a hypocrite if I looked down my nose at somebody who wanted to do it
right
here, and I don't I don't see anything wrong with that guy. That's like, oh man, that's my thing. That's my jam. I want to go black hunting, black bear hunting, or grizzly bear hunting every year after year. You know, so.
So I relay to something else.
Yeah.
So I work in. We do a lot of timber work, and you know I get new people, and we're using chainsaws, and we build bridges, right? So you have to use a green tree. Which is alive there. You pick the straightest one because you're trying to build a bridge that mules can use. Right. And blah, blah, blah. And every year you almost have to have the same conversation with somebody about, well, cut that tree. Well, that's the nicest one, right? That's the biggest tree. It's not, you don't get the biggest one. Obviously there's all these rules,
right.
But, why are you going to cut the big one? Let's cut this little one. He says, well, why are you judging this thing's life, right? Like, it's young and old, what's the difference, right? A life's a life. If I like to shoot, like I like to hunt elk and deer, I'm taking the life of an animal. If I take the life of a grizzly, I mean, there are greater and smaller animals, right? But
right, yeah, of course.
It's kind of all, I don't know. I think it's just funny sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing. It's like people that are okay with fishing but not with hunting. I mean, it's like, what, a fish's life is not worth
yeah.
the same as a, you know, a rabbit.
That salmon,
right?
That just swam. Yeah, right. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's personal lines in the sand, I guess. But
right. Yeah. No, I mean, from that standpoint, I feel like if you're okay with one of them, you don't have to do the other thing. You don't have to necessarily support the other thing, but you shouldn't go against the other thing and just, you know, take like, I don't know, say necessarily be Sweden, you know, kind of like
yeah.
neutral ground, you know, I don't know. It's a tough thing.
Well, yeah,
thing,
I mean,
man.
The only person I feel who has a legitimate argument against hunting is somebody who is actually a vegetarian.
Like a vegan, actually, not even a vegetarian.
Vegan.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, like you've made this decision for whatever reason, but like you really, you know, but everybody else, if you buy turkey meat at the store,
mm-hmm.
you really don't,
right.
in my opinion, obviously,
sure.
should be able to talk poorly about hunting. Like,
exactly.
Maybe you don't go hunting, but just leave it alone because you're eating meat.
Exactly. So. Exactly. I actually respect vegans because you, regardless of your philosophy, you took a stand, one side, all the way. You're all the way over here. This is what I want to be cruel, try to be as cruelty free, even though that's a whole different other argument. I'm actually was going to talk to you about that. I've been working on a article about that. I've done so much research, and it's crazy how, like, something like 7.3 billion wild animals die every year because of agriculture, because of making those things that vegans eat. You know, it's pretty
yeah.
crazy. Anyway, that's a whole different topic. But I still respect their position. Okay, you don't want to eat things that come from animals. You don't want to eat, you know, the proteins, wild proteins, or farm proteins, whatever. It's all vegetable or plant-based. Fine, I respect you.
Right.
What
I get along.
Is,
I can understand
yeah.
that. I can understand that.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's fair.
But I can't stand. I cannot respect a guy like you said. That's like, how could you kill that animal? And then you go look on their Instagram and he's got selfies with his fucking burger. You know, you're like, okay, dude. I mean,
right.
That cow that you're eating right now didn't have a, you know, didn't have a wife, didn't have a mom and a dad and, you know, like, whatever. It's just, it's crazy.
Well,
yeah.
My dad and I, so we bird hunt Southwest Kansas every year, and there's out there, I think it's called Seaborn. I think it's a Tyson, or maybe it's just their own thing, but they have these
mm-hmm.
little, we used to, you know, we have fields we've been hunting for a long time, and I think it was about 10, 15 years ago, they started putting up these like white, you know, almost like a big, long car shed, you know, like a, almost like an aviation hangar. It's long.
Like a hangar, yeah.
Yeah. And so we're like, well, and they stink. Like they stink. Yeah. You don't want to be downwind of them.
Right.
And we're, you know, my dad's curious and I'm curious and, you know, the public land goes right next to it and okay, yeah. So we walk up the driveway and there's flaps and these, you know, they're like canvas plastic kind of stuff. And you can look in there and there's like, you know, four pigs, just five pigs and a thing the size of a pickup truck, right? It's like they're clamoring over each other to get to the feed spout. Like, that's not cool. They'll probably never see a grain of dirt, right? Like,
yep.
That's, you got to feed America, right? You got to feed New York City. But
if
I think people might be protesting, I mean, they're protesting all kinds of meat, but to protest hunting, it seems like the wrong battle to me.
Right. Exactly.
But then again, that goes back to what you're saying about education, right? Like,
yep.
A lot of people see beer bottles on the side of the road, a guy at the store buying Keystone Light and Blaze Orange, and then a pickup truck with a rifle on the back of the window, you know, when they're trying to, you know, take their kid to school or something. And that doesn't look that great.
Well, it's been ingrained in us since, I don't know how long ago. There was a point, there was a shift somewhere along the line where the hunter used to be viewed as the provider, almost heroic in a sense. And then slowly but surely that shift to us being the villains. I mean, the best way I can equate it is, and I'm not a racist, and I'm trying, I don't want to be unpolitically correct, but we're the Middle Easterners of the world. You know, hunters are like, a hunter walks in the room, this is like when a guy from the Middle East walks in a room, you automatically are suspect of that guy. He might be the greatest guy in the whole world, but you automatically have somewhat of an opinion about it. You may say you don't, but deep down inside, you know you do. You know that somewhere along the line, you feel like, I don't know about this guy. And
well, hunters just talk about hunting too, right? Which is probably real annoying for everybody who's not.
Yeah.
Right? They're all, I mean, you come in there and you got another hunter in the room, that's like what you're going to talk about for like 4 hours. Like,
right.
Like, oh, man. What'd you think about that, Rachel? You know, and but I don't know how that shift happened, right? Like you have, you know, historically hunters were very important, right? Like what Esau, right? And Nimrod, those are the ones from the Bible that I can think of. And then you have over time, I mean, I guess in American history, you had all these other people, market hunters. I mean, we kind of like blame, let me run a hypothesis past you. I've been thinking about this week on the trail. See what you think. So we've been blaming market hunters for the decline of wildlife populations, right? That's like who we blame. But market hunters had to have a market. So who were they feeding? They were feeding the railroad, right?
Yep.
So was it the railroad who killed off the wildlife populations? Because the guy, it's not like the hitman isn't the only one who gets charged with the crime, right?
So who
were the market hunters working for? Right? It wasn't just like fine people buying fine robes in New York City. I mean, you're talking about a mass slaughter of animals, right, for meat. So who was footing that bill? And I've been kind of curious about that lately. Like, well, you know, I mean, and was it at what cost? I mean, now we have a connected nation. Right? We have, you can take a train, and that's what they used to do from Seattle to Chicago or to Boston. I mean, that's what they were doing. So did the animals suffer for the sake of progress, and now we're trying to right that wrong, but we still have the progress? I don't know. It's all...
Yeah.
It's a pretty interesting story to ponder. And it is an American, it's a uniquely American story. So I agree,
that's
it should be taught. I don't know how you would do it. I mean, it's kind of a fun story. You can make it a fun story and a sad. It's yeah. It's got everything you want, right? It's got beautiful animals, a conflict, and now you have had a comeback.
Right.
So I think you're onto something with that.
Well, unfortunately, we lost Charlie in that last couple of minutes. He's up in the mountains and he lost cell phone service. But we were basically just saying our goodbyes, and we got the gist of the podcast. Thank you for listening in. If you want to stay in contact with the podcast, a good way to do that is to check out my blog at johnstallone.me. That's John Stallone, all one word, .me. Thanks.